one, just know, every one of those, there's 9 or 10 blow-ups. So it doesn't all, but what does he say? Keep moving. Don't give up. Jesus is worth it. P.J. Fleck said it this way: we define failing as growth and failure as quitting. He said if you fail at something, you can grow from it. You learn, okay, well, that didn't work. Let's try something different. That didn't go so great. Let's try a different thing. He said failure is when you give up. That's failure. Failing is just an opportunity to grow, especially if you did it with a pure heart. Sometimes you do things with a pure heart that just doesn't go well, and you don't have to come up with a reason why. You don't have to figure out why it didn't go well. You don't have to blame yourself. You don't have to blame somebody else. You can just say, boy, I thought that was going to go better. I am going to learn from this, and it will not cause me to step back. Here, Fleck interviewed. His first head coaching position was at Western Michigan University. And he went there, and he brought his row the boat philosophy, which I said was not, he carried that over into football. He was born out of his family. And he said his first year at West, he came, row the boat, you know, is this a big deal, big slogan, you know, trying to get everybody all over town, row the boat. And his first year at Western Michigan University, they went 1-11. And the one is a one win, 11 losses. There was a publication that he read that came out that ranked head coach, all the head coaches in Division I football. He was last. That's got to hurt. And he said people all over town began to mock him and make fun of him. You know, row, row, row the boat, and you're the last guy. You're the last, you know, guy. One win. We've done better than that with other coaches. Move on to something else. And it really, really discouraged him. It really hurt. Because this came out of his family. It's more than football to him. He had a charity going on, all this other kind of stuff. And he said that after his son died, he and his wife divorced. That happens a lot when parents lose the children. It's like 70% divorce rate after parents lose the child. They ended up being divorced. And he said it just got to be so stinking hard that he really did feel like giving up. And he met a girl, a young lady named Heather, and they began to date, and she would become his future wife. And she was trying to encourage him, keep on, keep on. And he said, do you know who I am? Do you know who I am? I'm the 1-11 divorced football coach everybody's talking about in town. And she said, well, looks like I'm the girl that's going to change all that. Now, the idea behind that is not go find a girl to make your life better. Okay, that's not the moral of the story. The moral of the story is you got to immerse yourself in the things of God and the people of God that will row with you. It's not something you just do by yourself. It's something you realize that there's going to be bumps and there's going to be hard times, but the bumps and hard times can help you. Most of you will know that a golf ball has dimples in it. They didn't always have dimples in it. When golf first started back in the 1800s, it was perfectly smooth. It wasn't nearly, the golf balls weren't nearly as hard as they are now. And so they would get dinged up, you know, because there are people like me that hit them into trees and stuff like that. And so the balls would get kind of dinged up. And what they noticed was as the balls got dinged up, they flew straighter and further. And so there's a guy named William Taylor that first got the patent for putting intentional, people started putting stuff, they started dimpling their own golf balls. And so he got a patent for dimpling the golf balls. And today, if you have a golf ball, there's between 300 and 500 dimples. Now you needed to know that. When you came to church this morning, you were wondering how many dimples there were in a golf ball. And now you know. Between 300 and 500 dimples in a golf ball, because what? The dimples make it fly further and straighter. And your failings, the hard times, the shots that you take, the insults that you take, the difficulties you go through, they enable you. It's one of God's ways to enable you to fly straighter towards Jesus. Colossians 1:28, 1:29, the New Living Translation, he says, that's why I work and struggle so hard depending on God's Christ's mighty power within me. The word work and struggle, it's the idea of a wrestler. It's the idea of being all in. It's the idea of giving all that you got. If Paul was talking to us today, he might use the illustration of an MMA fighter. Every once in a while, I don't usually watch the MMA fights, but once in a while when I'm going through ESPN, I'll see one. And here's what I believe about MMA fighting. Number one, if I'm ever in a cage, call the law, because that didn't happen voluntarily. But the idea is, if you're an MMA fighter, you're locked up in that cage. Two things. One, you better go all in. And two, you're focused. Nothing matters except what happens in that cage. And you're, I mean, it's the word comes from the word agony, strife, giving everything you got. And Paul says we need to give everything we got, becoming more like Jesus and helping somebody else. Last of all is the initiative. Got to take the initiative. Got to get after it. Okay? Got to stand around looking at a boat's not rowing, studying rowing's not rowing, reading a book about rowing's not rowing, talking about rowing's not rowing. We need to take some initiative and say, okay, I am going to do what God called me to do. And there's plenty that you already know. You see, sometimes I'll say things like, we don't need to just go out and do something and ask God to bless it. Experiencing God. Watch where God's at work and joining there. And that's true for the big things, okay? We don't want to just say, okay, we're going to start a church in Australia, okay? We want to make sure God's at work in this. But listen, you don't have to wait around to go love somebody. You don't have to wait around to forgive somebody. You don't have to wait around to be faithful to your marriage, to be faithful to your church, to be faithful to your friends. You don't have to have God hit you in the head with a lightning bolt to know that you're supposed to share your faith, to know that you're supposed to help each other, encourage each other, and pray for and with each other, and say amen once in a while. No, I'm just thinking about that part. But I'm serious. There are so many things that we already know to do. And I'm talking about those things. Do them. The best way to understand the will of God is to do the will of God. The best way to find the will of God is to do the will of God. I was reading a book by a lady named Mel Robbins. She's never said anything about God, but she has an interesting book called The 5-Second Rule. Mel was a graduate of law school. She was a lawyer, had several jobs. Her husband's an entrepreneur. And she had, around 2007, she had quit her job because a TV show had offered her, a TV network had offered her a job on a TV show. And it looked right, felt like a fit for her, going in, remaking the small businesses and things like that. It looked like just the kind of job she would want. Her husband had a restaurant that was wildly successful, so he started a second restaurant, and then 2008 hit. 2008, if any of you know, was the time of a recession in the United States. After filming just a show or two, they pulled the plug on her show. All of a sudden, she's unemployed, realizes she can't do anything else with network TV because they've got her under contract, and if they're not filming, she's not getting paid, and her husband's restaurant failed. And all of a sudden, she said, we went from this life where things were cool to this life of, I don't know what to do. And she said, within a year or so, we're ducking bill collectors. We're trying to figure out how to pay the mortgage. She said, it just really got, and so she said, you know, I really kind of got down about all this. My husband and I start snapping at each other, getting on each other's nerves. Got to where I just was depressed, wanted to stay in bed all day. The alarm go off, and I just hit the snooze. Then I wake up late, and the kids have missed the bus. And she said life was just really tanking on her. And it looked like they were going to go into financial ruin. It looked like they were headed for divorce. And she said she watched TV one night, and they were launching a rocket. And she says, watching them count, you know, the big countdown, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, we're launching. And she said, that's what I'm going to do in the morning. I'm going to launch myself out of bed. And instead of hitting the snooze, she said, I knew there were some things that I could be doing to help my situation, and I just couldn't make myself do it. And so she said the next morning, when the alarm clock went off, she said, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, boom, out of the bed. Just launched herself out of the bed. And she noticed that she did it the second day, did it the third day, did it the fourth day. And she said, all of a sudden, I've started using this little thing all through the day. When I needed to be more patient with my kids, I'd say 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, patience. When I get ready to snap at my husband, I'd say 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, no snap. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, be kind. And she said, when I developed, watch this, I developed a bias toward action. And she said, just a silly little thing. She began to share that, ended up writing a book about it. 250,000 of people around the world have written into her saying how much this one little simple thing has helped her. So here's the thing I noticed about Christians a lot of times. We wait until we feel led. We wait till we're unmistakable. We wait till God gives some kind of big sign before we move sometimes when you already know what you need to do most of the time. You don't have to feel led to serve God and to serve his people and to serve his church. You don't have to feel led to love somebody. And so I want to challenge you. Here's my challenge for you this week. I want you to think, when you know there's something you need to do, to just say 5, 4, 3, 2, 1 and do it. And here's what she said. She said they found out there's actually a science behind this. That is, when you think about something you should do, if you wait over 5 seconds, you're likely to talk yourself out of it. You'll come up with a reason not to, you'll make an excuse, whatever. And the 5, 4, there's nothing magic about this. Now, if you don't want to do it, don't intend on doing it, you can count down until the cows come home and you're not going to do it. But she said the 5, 4, 3, 2, 1 focuses you away from excuses with a bias toward action. So let me challenge you. When you feel like you need to send somebody a text to encourage them this week, just go 5, 4, 3, 2, 1 and send it. When you feel led to pray with somebody this week, and you don't have to count down. It's just an interesting thing to do. If you feel like you need to, send somebody an encouraging email, if you feel like you need to volunteer to serve, if you feel like you need to give your one-word testimony, if you feel like you need to start tithing, if you feel like you need to ask somebody for forgiveness, this is what I did this week. I had somebody I needed to ask them to forgive me, and I was waiting around on the right time. Maybe y'all ever done that. Which means I don't want to do it right now. Wait for the right time. And this hit me, and I just said 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, and just did it. It may be make a phone call to somebody. Here's the thing. A lot of things you should do, God wants you to do, you know is good for you, you won't feel like it. And don't let your feelings talk you out of the life God has for you. So here's your weekly growth suggestion. When there's something you know God wants you to do this week, you don't feel like doing it, do the 5-second rule. You don't have to do the 5 seconds. You can do Nikes, just do it, whatever it is. But learn to respond in action. So let me close with a quick story. We'll be done. Quick story. A guy named John Patrick Hughes. John Patrick Hughes. That's not his name. What's his name? I'll find it. Patrick Henry Hughes. Thank you. I knew that one, right? Patrick Henry Hughes. A guy named Patrick Henry Hughes. This guy was born with no eyes, and he's disabled in a wheelchair. And he grew up that way, but he found out that he has this insane ability musically. And he's been interviewed by people on TV and stuff like that. They say his fingers are bigger than you would think. And when he goes to perform, like for this news reporter, she thought, man, he's just going to, play like Twinkle Twinkle Little Star or something. His fingers are too big. And said her eyes could not hardly keep up with his abilities. And Patrick Henry Hughes said, God gave me the ability to play. He said, God made me blind and didn't give me the ability to walk. Big deal. He gave me the ability to play piano, trumpet, and all that good stuff. And I'm the kind of person that's going to fight till I win. Somebody say, row the boat. So he's developed this thing. So he went to the University of Louisville, insane musician, and the band director said, Patrick Henry, that's just got to be cool. Patrick Henry, would you like to be in the marching band? And he said yes, and he joined the marching band. Now, I want you to think with me for a minute. How in the world did Patrick Henry play? I'm not talking about on the sideline. I'm talking about in the marching band, in a wheelchair, not just being stationary. He did it. His band director asked him. He said, yeah, I'll do it. He went home, and his dad said, yeah, we'll do it. And so every band practice, his dad's out there with his wheelchair, and they're marching. And I mean, y'all, he's in a wheelchair with grass, and I mean, he's sprinting, he's twirling, Patrick Henry's hanging on, he's playing his heart out, and they said the horn players behind dad had to learn to put their hands out instead of hitting him with the trombone, but his dad took a night shift where he worked at so he can go to class with Patrick. By the way, his dad's name is John Henry. John Henry took a night shift so he can go to class and take notes for his son. He goes to every practice, every game. Mom works overtime to make all this happen. What are they doing? They're saying what? We're going to row the boat. We're going to give this thing everything we have. So this morning, I'm asking God to reveal to us something that we need to do. And you know you need to do it. And let's do that. Let's row the boat today. If you joined us by Facebook Live, thank you so much. I want to challenge you. Whatever it is you know you need to do, as soon as we go away, why don't you just count down 5, 4, 3, 2, 1 and do it, okay? Those of us here, stand if you will, please. Just bow your heads and close your eyes. And I want you to pray and ask God, what does he want you to do today? How does he want you to respond today? And I want you to take it serious this morning. Maybe some days you daydream or you think about what's for lunch, but just for another 2 or 3 minutes, can you just take it really serious? What does God want you to do today? It may be just to lean over to somebody and say, I love you. It might be to lean over to somebody and say, will you please forgive me?